to, where does he say that? Yeah, he was at home in the labyrinth of the ear. He had figured out the labyrinthine structure of the eye that gives salience to the figure of the Cyclops. That's in Ulysses. But he was at home in the labyrinth of the inner ear. So then he says, on the labyrinth of the ear. So you got the labyrinth of stone and sea. That's rock, rock and sea. What is that? He says in the interior landscape, the rock is the, well, there's two. There's the rock and the whirlpool, Scylla and Charybdis. And then there's the march of the rocks or stone men through the town. They're the police. And the opposite is the watery realm of memory. So if tribal people don't forget, so the water would be acoustic space. The ear would be visual space. The eye would be visual space, or the rock. The rock, eye, visual space, versus ear, water, ear, water, and acoustic, tactile space. So, on the labyrinth of the ear, organ of the incarnation, Joyce built those metaphysical analogies which enable him to restore the orchestra of the Severan liberal arts to its plenary functions. So he reunited knowledge, all the separate aspects of it. He is never less than the artist of the word. Ulysses is reared on the labyrinth landscape of the human body as the body politic. And Finnegan's Wake whispers throughout, so it goes like goes inside the body and body politic, and whispers throughout with the voice of the river of human blood and immemorial racial consciousness. That would be electric media. You go inside the central nervous system. Joyce was at home in all labyrinths because of his original conquest of the stages of apprehension of the mind in act. That's what you're talking about. The mind in act is another simple phrase about techniques of self-awareness of your body processes and other things that Burke tried to learn in Tai Chi. Right, Burke? Accept that statement? Oh, some people are muted. Just a second.
Yes, and this is what I now see, for example, in the stages of the crucifixion. It's only right. Stages of, on this path of transformation. And right. There is this moment of, like you said, the arrest where there is the crucifixion.
And then that arrest, Ion loosens you up from the arrest of the epiphany by saying the Oreo cookie. Yeah, in the end, you're going to get insights, and he's going to loosen them up because the dance of the present is what he's training you to be able to surf. The dance of the present.
Yes, it's like all these things are like the Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's what McLuhan did in Mechanical Bride. He understood what he's saying here in the 40s, and then he started to project the stages of apprehension in ads, which is like finding you know, lofty, serious art perceptions in the vulgar. And did you hear me mention Tai Chi? Beg your pardon?
No. No, I didn't. I said that the Mechanical Bride, every time I look at it, even the cover, I just noticed something on the cover. It's really a genius book. It's an ingenious book.
Yeah. I said I was talking about the techniques of apprehension and the discipline, self-knowledge of your body in action, though it doesn't emphasize. Yeah. So then I said the kind of stuff Bert was trying to learn in Tai Chi.
Yes.
But they didn't tell you, just like I told Michael Brown, they don't tell you the extensions of your body processes in the body politic.
Right. They don't. And the body politic, that makes you, that creates more of an awareness than what the forms and the different techniques that they teach you in Tai Chi. It creates a more of a well-rounded awareness. That's what I find from looking at your work and how your perception.
Right. So they teach you the jujitsu, the subtle moves that undoes your opponent. That's how your body works. They don't teach you that that's what the Tetra managers do at the secret CIA in managing the planet. They set up all kinds of jujitsu things. See? Because the teacher thinks that he has nothing to do with Richard Nixon or any of those corrupt idiots. He's telling you a special art. But he doesn't see that the android meme is imitating the stages of epiphany.
Yeah.
Now, that's pretty amazing statements I'm making there. So that you're taught that you can activate the highest decibels of your awareness and abilities, but your teacher would not see the highest decibels of consciousness happening in the TV environment.
That's
fucking crap. I'm trying to get you out of that. Stop you watching TV, you know?
Right.
See, that's the really ingenious perspective that McLuhan came up with. And then he's saying that Joyce and these guys at Fitting's Wake, this incomprehensible book, was incomprehensible because it had that very special epiphany. It is an epiphany in the book form because it's frozen in the book for you to get, to see, to have a point of view or to see the vision. But then you have to look away from the book and look around you at the mixed media going on at work.
Yeah.
So he, Finnegan's Wake whispers throughout, with the voice of the river of human blood and immemorial racial consciousness. And Joyce was at home in all labyrinths because of his original conquest of the stages of apprehension of the mind in act. So you, Bert, you learned a lot of that stuff, the mind in act, through Tai Chi and other things you learned. And then you heard this ion that was talking about it in society.
Yes.
That's a mind. Yes. That's a shock to the mind.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Anybody else got anything to say? What happened to Gene? What about the British Columbia person?
You have something to say. Actually, the illustration of St. Michael, because the lost book of Nostradamus was found in a church behind Nostradamus' house that is dedicated to St. Michael of the Apocalypse.
Hmm. And the symbols, hey, Roxy, the symbols on the church over the door are the symbols that Templars put there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and St. Michael is actually, again, the symbol of you trying to ascend and killing this snake, like the lowest part that is, the little man part that is in the ground, and you have this sword, which is the cross, and you want to ascend, so...
That's on the doorway to the room where the book was found, right?
Yes.
Something like that? So these images you have to look at as stages of collective apprehension.
You see, Nostradamus changed his name and he chose Michael.
Yeah.
Michel Nostradamus.
And
so
Michael
again,
is the warrior.
Was actually his mission... His last prophecy was about the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And even his name is about that. About
the archangel?
What is all this Genesis about?
Yeah.
No, the apocalypse.
Well, I'm thinking of Michael as the, he's the archangel of warriors.
Yes, but he's fighting the beast. And usually in paintings of the... Apocalypse.
Yeah.
He's portrayed killing the snake or the beast with many heads.
So remember,
so at the end of this period, these times, it's like we finally get rid of this snake, which are the fallen man.
Right. The beast is the little man. So you get rid of people by going into genome and genetics and cloning. So the beast, the snake, is an ambivalent image. It is tactility itself, or the action of the mind, which includes all the sensory tram of cognition. So it's being externalized. Lisa,
and that's why I think Ion said the beast is little man, the 666.
Yeah.
Right. And so the little man is going to rise by default when the guff empties. So the snake can be little man, but it also can be the serpent of wisdom. So that image you posted is a tactile image, or as McLuhan said, Menippean satire, which has acoustic resonance in it, the juxtaposition. No literal visual connecting, but dancing effects. Dancing effects like a rock band. Not a DJ. Fuck those guys. They are fucking have any knowledge. Bob's the first tactile, globally mosaic DJ. I'm the first one to present Epiphany. Imagine that. I just know if they heard my DJing, one of those guys at the restaurant, they'd say, I don't recognize any of those songs. where did that music come from? Like, they just listen to dinky, whatever it is. What do you call it? Dinkle, 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 you know, these monotonous beats. Now, you could say that's tact.
Sounds like house music. It's had a certain beat, and it goes on and on and on and on and on and on.
Right. So what's boring to me is Eskimo chants or Native American Indian chants. It's ridiculous. But the tactile culture goes into a repeating module, a repeating note like that, or grunt, and so they find it involving if you're a totally, fully tactile person. So we're seeing young people do tactile music, the repetitive note, the repetitive click or beat. I'm able to look at it as a result of mutation today. I mean, I'm playing music 50 years old, and a lot happened in 50 years. So the young people have maybe very different ears, if they even have ears at all.
Yes.
It's probably a certain kind of astrological sign of a 20-year-old who would like some of my music. Some signs wouldn't. They're too tactile, but I can see some people, they, for whatever temperamental reason, their conditioning, they would like the emotion in 20th century music. They gravitate towards it.
Has Brent commented on your DJing, Bob? Has Brent said anything?
No, I don't think we'll have to ask him. No, I don't think he knows.
Never heard
it.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got to analyze his music sensibility.
Yeah.
Put him under the X-ray. We'll X-ray his music sensibility on Tuesday. Put him under the microscope.
Yeah, but that is something to think about, that their ears. I mean, because I remember when I was traveling with musicians 15 years ago, they were complaining. These were USA, New York-based musicians, and they were complaining that they took music out of the school and the children weren't learning the discipline of music. So you'd almost say that the kids really now don't really know music, you know, the essence of music. So they're just used to, you know, the same, that rave music or the hip-hop and all those kind of things. that their taste, like you said, like the DJ probably, if he listened to maybe three songs of your intro, he wouldn't know. He would think it was from another world.
Yeah,
the music.
Just like I think his music's from another world. A fallen world.
Yeah. No, that's a rich thing about your music, Bob. It's so rich, and it covers so many genres that it's a new genre because people, I mean, you know, the radio stations here play the same bubblegum, you know, bullshit. So I don't listen to the radio, but I do hear people listen to it. It's not music on the radio or any type of open sphere like what you have on Payday. Music's not played that way anymore, not that I'm aware of. And actually, Europe is pretty more open as far as all different types of music, but the way that you switch and go back and forth and mix, no one is doing that I'm aware of.
Right.
No one but you.
And you know, Zappa did make fun of the Supremes in the second album, Absolutely Free. And so no Zappa guy is going to play the Supremes right after Zappa. And you heard that today for the first time.
That's right.
But the what you were just saying, the mixture. So I went to the store last night, had to buy some stuff, and they have what it could be. Tracy, who's the young girl that's the big hero? Tracy has a T in her name. Tracy Spring or Twit Juicy or you know who's the main blonde?
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Okay, so
lately.
I was hearing. What?
She's in the, been in the news lately about her new album and.
Right.
Gaining royalties and all that kind of stuff.
And her royalties.
Yes.
Yeah. So, in Zappa's story on Grand Wazoo, 1972, he talks about it's a Roman gladiator environment. But it's a battle between high-pitched singers and different kinds of singing. But he's talking about mainstream music, you know, in 72, AM radio stuff. And so I was listening to this, and he said, all music is made for Debbie, who's a 13-year-old daughter of a union man. And Debbie has, you know, ridiculous childish tastes, but it might be okay when you're 13. So I'm listening to the music in the store, and I hear the cashier humming along. It's near the end of the day. I'm the last customer, and they are relaxing, so they're singing along to the music. And it is the archetypal, I couldn't tell if it was Madonna, Taylor Swift, or someone else, or you name five girl singers. But they're all the kind of same. You know, they're the girl singers that Zappa makes fun of on Grand Wazoo. They're that archetypal emotional wailing. You know, deep hurt wailing. And it's actually painful. It's so sentimental. It's like McDonald's burgers or something. That still is there. That kind of whatever that is, the heart of the beast is there. So you can hear it in Muzak or something, you know. But
the music for a snake.
Yes. Use music for snake. So then I get home. And I Skype Roxana, and she's listening to this glorious classical music, The Passion. And she's just rocking to it. Yeah, Bach. Okay. And the richness of it is right there, and I haven't heard that. I don't even know it. I might have heard it here and there, but I don't know it. I don't know, I'm listening to The Passion. But I appreciate the education in classical music I get from Roxy, just because she's listening to it as her music. So
you know, it's very nice. To see conductors conducting rehearsing,
yes,
because then you get the nuance, the changes, how the phrasing, the dynamics, and the beauty of how these swings are constructed, and why this music is so more interesting than just three chords and la 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 la.
Yeah.
There are so many things going on, and
yes,
it's really, really, really fascinating. Like I was watching some videos by Dudamel. He's a conductor from Venezuela.
Yeah.
And he's saying to the students, it's like the young orchestra in Venezuela, Stravinsky created heavy metal. So that they understand what he's trying to, the feeling or the force he's trying to achieve when they play Stravinsky,
right.
He's saying, okay, yes, and only the percussions, but think heavy metal, and then there's play,
The roughness of Stravinsky is like the roughness of heavy metal.
Yeah, so he says Stravinsky was the first heavy metal rocker.
Well, that's the same thing, the same method. McLuhan, he got his students, he'd tell them Finnegan's Wake is about TV because they were just encountering TV, so he'd get them to identify with it. So you're saying he communicates to these young people in their language of their experience.
Well, it's really interesting to see people conducting orchestras. Then you get many, many things about the music and the structure. I'm going to post a video so that you...
Yeah, that'd be good. I don't have time to listen to classical music, but I would someday make time to study it a bit. Because I'm good at visual word, what you're talking about, classical polyphony, say. But I'm not trained on the ear version of that. That's why I'll find trinklet, triplets, what you find boring, I find interesting, you know, or I like it.
No, I mean, it can be nice, but it's like when you are used to hear more complex music, it's boring. It's like if you have the choice.
No, it's like listening. It's like reading a simple novel. It's boring, where I'd rather read Finnegan's Wake. So that's the complexity level that I'm doing, that's miming what you're doing in music, what you're consuming, the complexity of it, the shifts.
Yeah, so I'm going to post on your Facebook. This is not the Stravinsky one, because the Stravinsky one is in Spanish.
Right.
This is he's rehearsing Mendelssohn, and you
okay.
can see.
All right. Good.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking that the drops make you like everything, and so it made me like mainstream music more. Boring music I didn't like at the time. These cliche hits. I played ABBA last week. I never dare listen to ABBA 50 years ago. But I think the bliss of the drops in our products makes you quite stoned and like anything.
Yes. Ion's playlist is a testament to that, because he has a really wide variety of mix of music. And it's
right.
all pleasurable to listen to.
Yeah, when Roxy's not getting her drops, she gets all fucked up in her mind and needs complicated stuff. She starts specializing. Yes. So look
I don't
at
know
this.
if you can play it from Facebook, or maybe I look for something else in YouTube.
No, I didn't get what you're saying. I'm saying post what you're talking about.
I'm not sure if you can play this video from your Facebook.
Oh, that's right. We're in another country.
Well, no, I don't know.
Did you post
we
it
can
right
hear
now?
It. Just, yes, I posted it. But
let me see if I can get it. Okay, there it is. Nice orchestra seats. This guy, he looks like a heavy metal guy himself. He's got 1970s hair. Okay, so is that coming through?
Somebody has to walk with that.
Okay, so that's great. It makes the international network. I can hear it, so that's good. I just want, we're talking about MK Ultra, so we're getting into the last paragraph, and he says, Having suggested that Joyce took up the analysis of this matter at the very promising stage at which Mallarmé had left it at his death in 1898, I should like to point to what is, so far as I know, the first stage of philosophic awareness concerning the retracing of apprehension as the poetic process. So he's going to go into Gilles Somme and his book. That comes later. He's going to talk about the first guy to sort of talk about the aesthetics of the poetic process related to the stages of apprehension in the context of philosophy. So the book is called The Philosophy of the Human Mind. That's like the stages of awareness you'd learn in Tai Chi. The philosophy of the stages of apprehension. So he says it occurs
and
in Thomas
Brown.
And
this is also great music. You have many stages of apprehension. Like I saw the YouTube, maybe it's just like 2 minutes. You can or 1 minute. If you play it,
okay. Yeah, I'll play in a minute. I just want to get into this point about the MK Ultra. So it occurs in Thomas. So the first stage of philosophic awareness concerning the retracing of apprehension as the poetic process. It occurs in Thomas Brown's posthumously published lectures. He didn't even get the satisfaction of talking to anybody about it. It's published after he's dead. His lectures on the philosophy of the human mind. He was a professor. Brown was a professor of moral philosophy at Edinburgh until his death in 1820. And it's in the lecture 37 where he is considering the, quote, secondary laws of suggestion. Laws of suggestion is hypnosis. That's MK Ultra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to figure out how to suggest even to kids to be smart. But, oh, look at this. It's the secondary laws of suggestion as they affect genius. Holy shit, that's what I said. Norbert Wiener said through the Evergreens that they were concerned about how to make kids genius. So, Jesus, comes full circle back to my opening probe. the secondary laws of suggestion as they affect genius that he states, it's in this lecture, concerned about genius and the laws of suggestion. He states the difference between the imagination of genius and the fancy, note that's a good word, because they're just dreaming, most little men are just dreaming, unaware, and the fancy of ordinary minds. The imagination of genius, that's like controlled fancy, and then the whimsical, drifting, lazy, lost in the dream of perception is the fancy of ordinary minds. The genius, he suggests, works in some sort of reverse direction, the opposite direction to ordinary minds. Then it gives a complicated quote, but it's interesting that, it's coming together nicely here. So then it's a complicated, wordy statement of what we're talking about, but I'll just go to the next thing. McLuhan says, in these lectures, Brown is a severe critic of Locke and Hartley, and their guys are bringing in visual space. You know, Locke is talking about the sacredness of property. And the associationists. The associationists are guys like freely dreaming in their mind. Like looking at the Rorschach inkpot. The little man is in fancy. So Brown is a critic of these guys and seems to use analogy in a traditional sense, says McLuhan about Brown. To what extent he was aware of the speculations of Coleridge, I cannot say. But Coleridge seems not to have had any inkling of the retracing process of the poetic process. So, Locke and Hartley are philosophers. So Brown is a philosopher who might not be involved with analyzing the senses like a poet, but he's saying here's this philosopher knows more about the stages of apprehension than the supposed poet, Coleridge. It is noteworthy that Coleridge's celebrated definition of the primary imagination merely states the notion of Aristotle and Aquinas concerning the nous poeticus, or the agent intellect. And that definition was, the primary imagination I hold to be the living power and prime agent of all perception, so that's the tactile ground of cognition, and is a repetition in the finite mind of the eternal act of creation in the infinite I am. So the act of creation is miming the stages of apprehension, the creator, capital C creator, in the I am process of simple perception is miming the act of creation of the universe. So the universe follows these natural processes.
Or yes, and in a way, this whole thing we're doing is the becoming the creation of man.
Yeah, the creation, good point. The creation of man. the creation of the I am. So that would be the cellular level, the frequency levels that ion goes into, you know, at the subground of matter.
It's because according to Plato, we're just like shadows of what we should really be, like enslaving in a cave, looking at these shadows. But we have a lot of potential that hasn't been developed. So this whole Genesis is about that.
Right. The remember I read you that quote about the slightest current change in perception? That's what he says in early in the essay. I must have taken it from this. Oh, I took the quote from this essay. Joyce was able to incorporate at every point in his work the body of the past in immediate relation to the slightest current of perception. Okay, so there was a point there where he unifies all the arts, the seven liberal arts. That was said somewhere. So you can see that seeing to getting the stages of perception is the real kind of beauty. It's the real what Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. The Father, Son, and Holy Ghost created the universe. That's the creation of the completed stage of tactility, or the great I am. So a repetition in the finite mind of the eternal act of creation in the infinite I am.
Yes, and in a way, art is this thing that gives you the eye through perception.
Say that again. Gives you something through possession?
No, that gets you high through perception. Art.
Yes. Yes.
Art.
Yeah. Gets you high through its sensory massage.
Yes, but it's just like a moment of pleasure. It's like not something that stays.
it's
the TV chromosome 14.
Whatever harmony is in the art piece activates the harmony in the receiver's consciousness. So that would be a pleasurable sensation. But I'm trying to find the sentence where he says he unifies the arts. Can you find that, Bert?
Yeah, one moment, Bob. Arts.
You got to go in half an hour, right, Roxy?
Yes.
I'm sorry you're not going to hear any of the McLuhan stuff, but I did read a couple of good quotes at the beginning of the show on the computer.
Okay.
What?
Now I'm possessed by the lost book of Nostradamus.
I know. You can't take
just
another shot.
Trying to get what is he trying to say there?
Yeah.
Bob, it's in the paragraph that starts, since the labyrinth and the landscape calls.
Yeah, I have it. So he says, on the labyrinth of the ear, Joyce built those metaphysical analogies which enable him to restore the orchestra of the seven liberal arts to its plenary functions. Now, the media do this. You could say, when you get into the Android meme, it replays all the different media environments and brings them together into plenary functions. See, the seven liberal arts are literary Gutenberg and pre-Gutenberg stuff, manuscript stuff. But the seven media landscapes are what are orchestrated for the Android meme. And it, you could say, the primary Android meme I hold to be the living power and prime agent of all perception and is a repetition in the finite mind of the eternal act of creation in all analog media, the great I am. Or the great I am is the effect of the Android meme. The repetition in the finite mind. Okay, so the Android meme gives you a finite media scape, which is a repetition of the eternal act of creation in the infinite I am. And you have those two words from Thiel, synesthesia and co-anesthesia. Co-anesthesia is you being in this.
So Ion said, when you asked him, what's your name? He said, I am.
Yes.
When Moses went to the mountain, he asked what he called God. How should I call you? And he said, I am.
I know. And so the co-anesthesia is the position of the director in the center of the whirlpool of the theatrical presentation, and you're in the center of it in the control position, and you're witnessing the mixture of your media, and that's synesthesia. So you got synesthesia and co-anesthesia. So co-anesthesia is in the center of the whirlpool of synesthesia. So that co-anesthesia position is the great I am.
Yes. This is perfect to play that video about the conductor.
Okay, we're getting to that. And
it's
so
very,
then,
very short. It's very short.
I know, but I just want to finish the thought here because we're coming to the end of the essay. So he calls this I am the nous poeticos, the agent intellect, or the agent intellect it's called. That this has not been noticed as the nous poeticos. So the great I am of creation, so you think of vast galaxies and universes, it comes down to, on the minute level, to the agency of tactility in your being, in your, quote, mind. That this has not been noticed as the nous poeticos is only less curious than the fact that Coleridge never seems to have commented on it again. His definition of the poetic or secondary imagination has aroused great interest and enthusiasm, but is far from the precision of his definition of the primary imagination. Then you have this confused statement on the secondary imagination. And McLuhan says, nothing could well be vaguer than this. It does not look very impressive beside Brown's statement. And Brown's view is in the line that leads through Edmund Burke to Edgar Allan Poe to Baudelaire, Arthur Rimbaud, Stefan Mallarmé, and James Joyce. Now we can hear the music.
And Nostradamus, okay. And the great monarch.
Yes. Okay, so we put the sound up. Sound up. I think I got everything working.
Nothing up. Okay. Somebody have to walk with that, you know. I have to listen people walking out, you know. We need a lot of ambulance for this contrast, you know. The adjective that he used first, that allegro vivacissimo, that I always say, is allegro guerriero, war. Allegro in war, something like that, have to be the translation. But he changed to allegro vivacissimo. But okay, it's have to be the... no, but clean. Together. Here we are. Huh? On. Okay, with the same energy. Beautiful. Woo. Yes. Yeah. No, please, no.
He's very pissed off.
Why the up is less articulate? Okay. One more time. One and.
Was he happy there at the last little bit? Or was he still... He didn't stop them. He wasn't complaining. I guess he was happy there.
Yes, he said, yes, it's okay, but now together.
Yes. And what... is he famous, this guy?
Yes, yes.
He's a stickler for fucking getting some obscure acoustic effect there.
Yeah, he's intense.
He's seen 50 kinds of snow.
You see the dynamics, how it goes from very soft to wah.
Yeah.
Like lighting a fire.
Right. And is it a documentary on him?
Yes, it must be because he's now becoming very famous.
Do you think he's got good ears?
Yes. Yes.
And you haven't had that kind of conductor frustrated with your scene in the old days, or did you?
No, but when I was young, there was a time when I thought about becoming a conductor.
Oh, yeah?
But then I did it.
Yeah, you became a rocker. Or did you want to be a conductor after the nightclubs?
No, more or less at the time.
Hey, why did you go into rock? When I was telling this person about your life, why did you go into nightclub music? You liked it?
No, because we needed equipment, and before, in the pterodactyl age, synthesizers and all these things were very expensive, so we started doing like music for ads and playing. To gain
that's what the Gurdjieffian or the rock guys?
Both were the same. We have the studio with the Gurdjieffian, but we were also doing all these things at the same time we were.
Wow. The same people were in your rock band as the electronic composer?
Vicente Rojo and the other guy, Samir Meneseri.
Okay, so why, you're not being clear, how did you get to rock? Just because you had the equipment that you could do it?
Well, when I was in high school first, I met a singer called Blanca Watts, and she was into new wave, and she said she was punk, but I said she was a pink.
Yeah.
And she got into some, like, these superstar talent things that are now very, very trendy. At the time, there was some type of contest like that. And she won, I think, the second prize. And they released a single of one of her songs. But it was sung by another singer.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, better looking than her.
Yeah.
But we became friends, and we had a band, and we were rehearsing in my bedroom. And that's how I start meeting these people. And then, because I was also into the electronic music, I asked the other composers, oh, maybe we could make a band and play.
So you were influenced by this girl because she turned you on to the pop music?
No, she invited me to play with her because I had synthesizers.
Oh, and you didn't?
Yes, I did.
Okay, privately?
We're still friends. No, we also played in some clubs and parties.
So she wanted to have a new instrument in her band, synthesizers, and you could do it.
Yes. Yes,
so
it was like a way of earning money for
right,
equipment.
But you were doing classical training. When did you start playing the violin? Were you 7, 8, 9?
Almost 8.
Right. So you started out at 8, and you're doing the classical training. She's the first opportunity for you to engage in pop music, to play whatever she was playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
She must have some recordings. I don't have them, but I still have contact with her, so I can find them.
she's still a friend.
Yeah.
And you're saying that she was not as pretty as someone else?
Yeah, after she won that contest, she got second place. They made a record with her song, but she was not the singer. The singer was telenovela actress.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. So that's how you started. It started in your bedroom, playing it for her in your bedroom. That's neat.
But I suppose most musicians now have some type of also rock experience or some type of jazz, at least.
You mean
something
now?
That happens. Yeah.
Yeah, it was more sheltered back there, more separate, more old-fashioned in your day. Right? As a kid, you weren't given opportunities to play pop music. You had to do serious training and work your way to be a conductor. Well, so that was Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to say that many musicians I know did play with rock bands. Like most of them did progressive rock or some type of jazzy thing, but it's now very common.
For young people to be playing all of it, classical.
Yeah, even if they are classical.
Right. Whereas you, in your era, it wasn't so common.
It was starting
isolated.
To be normal.
So you were part of the change. So then when you were playing in the nightclubs, were you still doing electronic composition when you had time?
Yes.
Hmm. And you made money from it and did it?
No, from the more academic electronic music, no.
No, not from that. No, that's what I mean. You did the pop.
You got invited
get money.
To the festivals and all, but.
Yeah, you did the pop music to get money.
From. Yeah.
Yeah. So this person, she looked, that I was talking to, looked you up on YouTube, and she mentioned that there's footage of you playing a piano or something. And what would that be?
I don't know, because most of the things that, I mean, all the things that are there, somebody else uploaded.
Yes.
I put things on the internet.
Yeah, they put them up there. You didn't.
No.
Yeah, so I wondered if it was a synthesizer, but do you recall playing the piano?
Yes, but I don't know what
yeah, what she's talking about. Well, maybe if I just put up YouTube, maybe it'll come up.
I wanted to do some videos like climbing to the moon or something like that, but I haven't.
What's all that noise?
Forget it.
Are you saying that you did the song Fly Me to the Moon?
No, I want to do it with piano and just like for fun. All right. Or other songs.
So on YouTube, there is a... Oh, no, that's Rosario Flores. Doesn't seem to be anything
it's
under Roxanne.
That's flamenco.
That's flamenco?
I think.
Right. What would you be listed under? Roxana Flores?
I don't know.
Hmm.
They don't want to know.
I know.
<Very embarrassing. laughs> Yes, it's like things you do when you're young, and then they're all out there. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's interesting, when you put in Roxana Lorenzar, up comes a lot of our first videos that we did in 2014. A lot of them. But I was going to say, Bert, did you hear this song? Well, I couldn't find it. It could be anywhere. There's this Mexican group. So I played this Mexican music today. Well, I wanted to say that I watched an 18-year-old.
I found the boxer. I'm going to send it to you.
Okay. I watched an 18-year-old Spanish, Basque, Mexican, Toltec, Irish girl mime her mouth to that song. She knew the song. But that's what she is. She's Spanish, Basque, Mexican, Toltec, Irish, and maybe something else.
Sephardic Jew.
Sephardic Jew, yeah. This is the...
Really?
This is Roxana's sister's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And she's a good singer herself, a good musician. So you're sending something?
Because somebody told me they found a boxer called Roxana Flores. I found the boxer, so I just sent it to you. The boxer.
Oh, okay, good. Let's see. This is on my Facebook or an email? It's probably an email, right?
Yeah, right. For fun.
So you just found this for the first time? You didn't know about it?
No, but somebody told me, so I said, okay, let's see if I find it.
Yeah, the boxer.
Yes. Do you remember somebody said, I am a boxer?
Yes. So this is the audio is you? Is that what we're
it's a real boxer. Fighter.
Oh, you're just gonna show the boxer with your name. I see. All right. Well, I'm not playing that. But find some music.
it's okay for next time. I'll send you.
Let's see what they got. Well, and people have been probably adding stuff since 2014. Where you see your 2012 rock group, whatever that guy is that you're playing the synthesizer or organ in, right? Up on a big stage. Okay, so look, what do we, you got 8 minutes, so what do you want to talk about to finish up your part?
Well, just to say that, everything for me seems to be very coherent, and I really like how Ion brings these topics, like with humor, like these stairs and ladders, the Oreo cookie, and now the Lost Book of Nostradamus, like the great monarch of the future.
Right. Now, so there was a phrase by Ernst Haeckel in the 1890s or something, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. So the individual development of the species replays the development of the species itself. So that's an interesting point. McLuhan is developing that, you know, the growth of the individual and the stages of apprehension are imitating or are imitated by the stages of apprehension in technology. So that's the leap there. So McLuhan says that Joyce took the stages of apprehension and saw them in the rituals of human legend and myth. But McLuhan, I guess you could say, saw the extensions in machines, which are part of ritual, myth, and legend, but that would be the user's content of machines. But the machines, you hear that beep? I wonder what
that
is.
Yeah.
So the stages of apprehension are mimed by the machines. That may be, I mean, McLuhan says Joyce has it in his book, but he doesn't say that. He says Joyce mimed saw the drama of cognition of the individual recapitulating the phylogeny, but it was the phylogeny of human ritual, myth, and legend.
Yes, and it's really fascinating to retrace and see these archetypes, these cliches and archetypes in
yeah.
so many works of art, in so many different environments and in different periods. And it cannot be a coincidence. Like in the Lost Book of Nostradamus, you have a snake that is flying and all these little things.
Yeah.
That we have been talking about, and then we see them now in this book, the barley. And
yeah, that's a good image.
The way in which these things have been cultivated is like amazing. And then Ian shows to us, and with a lot of humor, so that we just
we relax.
Yeah, get what you're talking about. With all this media,
yeah,
metanoia, and all these different subjects that seem to be not related, but everything is related, and it's really, really wonderful. You have to get Marshall McLuhan to get what you're really talking about, and why you are.
I have to get Marsh McLuhan to get what I'm talking about? Is that what you just said?
No, people in general, the snakes, the little
yes.
snakes that want to fly.
I must go forth and present my verbal art to the masses so that they can have enlightenment. That's what you're saying.
Yes, but in a way, this process has helped us also to understand many things and see these things in
yes.
the outer kingdom.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that we just can see that this is not fiction or craziness or our own invention. We're just witnessing the apocalypse. And that's the thing that really the name Michael Nostradamus is about, the apocalypse.
Yeah.
That was what he was talking about. All these.
What I was reading, what I read in 1950, that essay, actual historians, chemists, physicists, they were all involved in their specialties. They didn't even know he wrote that. They wouldn't see how it related to their work, I don't think. So you have in the 50s the beginning of all kinds of the knowledge explosion, and everybody's developing new aspects of chemistry, physics, and anthropology and all that, but they are going to meet a crisis. They don't improve the culture. Have we gotten better? Well, most people would say no, because they're, as McLuhan says, the dust of the new man gets in everybody's eyes, the dust of the new human. So they are forced to come back and look at what he was saying. Because he was describing where they were going, where they'd end up
yeah.
in their frustrated collapse of knowledge.
Yes, and all these things for me are like arguments. Like,
yeah.
I can say, look at the stairs in Chambord, on the cross and the stairs, and look in Nostradamus, look here.
You could write a PhD. This is your PhD.
Yeah, so it has been a process of, like I was saying before, digesting all the information and just...
Yeah. And you have the same digestive process. You have the same...
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Is Bill wondering if we want to end? Let's just check. No, we don't want to end, Bill. Let me see. Where is his thing? What is this?
Well, I have to go now, but thanks a lot. And
yeah,
who knows
I'm just telling
what,
Bill. Yeah, he
what
heard
is the next stage in our path to the light.
Yes, you're saying you will find the next stage this week.
Well, I just want to look more into the Los Booker, the
right. What were you just saying?